So welcome everybody this morning. We are in the second week of our study on the Jewish foundations of the New Testament. Last week we built a map because the land itself has something to say about the stories of the Bible. It affects what goes on in the stories of the Bible. So in keeping with what we want to do, and in keeping with giving you guys a wider view of some of the literature of the period outside of just the Bible, we'll start today with an introductory reading. This is from a book slash romance novel slash educational piece called Joseph and Asenath. Now we studied Genesis, a year ago, something like that? Remember the patriarch Joseph? Who did he marry? He married Asenath, who was the daughter of an Egyptian priest. And so this book tells the story of their life. And you have here, again, a prayer which I think if you were to read it in our service today, people would be like, oh, God bless me with that. Thank you. You know? Something maybe very different than we would expect from first century Judaism. So I just want to open it up by reading this.
Is this a book that people say should have been in the Bible? Or?
No, not necessarily. It never really was under consideration by the early church as going into the Bible. Okay, so this is Asenath's prayer of conversion to God.
When was this book written?
First century BCE. She says, "With you I take refuge, Lord, and to you I will shout. To you I will pour out my supplication. To you I will confess my sins. And to you I will reveal my lawless deeds. Spare me, Lord, because I have sinned much more before you. I have committed lawlessness and irreverence and have said wicked and unspeakable things before you. My mouth is defiled from the sacrifices of the idols and from the tables of the Egyptians. I have sinned, Lord. Before you, I have sinned in much ignorance and have worshipped dead and dumb idols. With you, I take refuge, Lord, and to you, I bring my supplication. And to you, I will shout. For just as a little child who is afraid flees to his father, and the father, stretching out his arms, snatches him off the ground and puts his arms around him. Likewise, you too, Lord, stretch out your hands upon me as a child-loving father and snatch me off the earth." A very, very intimate picture of God's relationship to the Jewish faith. So again, we're studying this for a couple reasons. First of all, we're studying because we know that context is important when we read and understand the Bible. Meaning is grounded in the original audience. We have to understand what the original authors were saying if we want to understand it. Secondly, we want to be submissive to the Word. There is always a danger of reading our own thoughts and ideas, our own 21st century anachronisms into Scripture. We don't want to do that. That's not being submissive to God's Word. And then also, we do this as because we want to worship God. We're called to worship God with our whole being, and that includes our mind. So study is good. Through this, we hope that we'll grow a deeper relationship with God through encountering the Bible in a new way. All right? So, last week, we did a map So, remember anything about the map? Where did we have some mountains? Give me some ideas. We're not going to redo everything.
Everywhere.
Everywhere, right. There's a mountain right here. Anyone remember what this one is?
Mount Carmel.
Mount Carmel, right. And it kind of takes, it kind of goes like this. I think of it as like an L, right? And it goes like this. And then there's another set of mountains over here to the east of the Sea of Galilee. And how do they run? Up or down or sideways?
Up and down.
Up and down, yeah. Sort of like this. And we'll see pictures of some of these mountains. And then we've got a whole bunch of mountains over here on the other side, right? Now we've got this central area, but we have some smaller stuff in here. Remember that? We've got some hills. And we'll see those today as well. Right? And then there are ancient roads here that have been there for millennia. And we'll see where some of those roads go as well. So today we're going to step beyond just making a map. We're actually going to look at some Bible passages as well as some pictures. Would you guys like to see what these places actually look like? You know, I always have things in my mind, but then when I see the pictures, I go, oh yeah, it's completely different. So I hope we can overcome maybe some of my faults today. All right, so let's start with Mount Hermon, the tallest point in the area. Someone asked me last week, how tall is Mount Hermon? And I didn't remember off the top of my head, so I looked it up. It is 9,232 feet high.
It's twice as much as you maybe thought.
Yeah, yeah. So there is always snow at the top of Mount Hermon, right? This is in the springtime, so it's got flowers in the valley below and then snow at top. Here it is in the summertime, a little bit less snow on top. Make sense? So a little bit different. It's not quite like the Rockies, you know, they're not as up and down. Maybe more like the Appalachian Mountains. Or if you're from other places, Appalachian Mountains. We don't say that in West Virginia. Okay. Now, Caesarea Philippi. Remember where Caesarea Philippi was? Just right, if here's Mount Hermon, it's just right up here. And we did a little study on Caesarea Philippi, what was that, a year and a half ago, something like that, and looked at this. This is where Jesus took to disciples. This is an imagining of what the Roman city looked like in the first century when Jesus and the disciples would have gone and visited. So notice you've got the typical Roman columns. You've got some sort of amphitheater here, which was always, if you were any sort of city of any sort of status, you had to have an amphitheater in the first century. That was your sign that you were civilized. We have an amphitheater. Okay? So very Roman. And then this is the actual grotto that, you know, according to mythology, they said led down to the underworld. Okay? Out of this area also came the headwaters of the Jordan. So you can go up and, you know, the springs are there, and that's kind of where the Jordan River starts.
Is that the area where the gases came out and people would pass out from the gases?
Yes. I don't know, Mr. Oil and Gas, do you have any sort of idea about
some sort of hydrogen sulfide?
All right. You heard it here. Hydrogen sulfide. knocking people out. So if you go up today, you can't actually go in the little cave, but you can kind of see in there. And so this is where the temple was, right, to the god Pan, which was a very sexualized god, had a lot to do with fertility rites. You know, he would, if you've ever seen a statue of him, he'd have a very large Yeah. So.
So his brother wasn't Peter.
Let's just say he emphasized his brother Peter.
Okay.
So. And then they had all these. They have all these little niches where they had little statues. People could make offerings, things like that. Okay. So that's Caesarea Philippi.
Where does that tunnel go to? Do they know?
It's just a cave. Oh, it's, okay. It just goes back a little bit. So, the thing about the ancient world is that the way they looked at life had a lot more imagination, I guess you'd say, than us. You know, if you see a dark cave, it could lead to the underworld, as opposed to us who would say, well, it only goes back 500 feet, you know. Maybe our scientific worldview has kind of ruined things in that sense for us. Okay, Sea of Galilee, right? This is the Sea of Galilee. Now, I know what you're thinking. It looks like a pretty good bass lake. And it is a pretty good bass lake. They've fished there for millennia. In fact, they have something called St. Peter's eels there. They're kind of like long eel-type looking fishes. Kind of a little bit scary. Extent. So the thing about the Sea of Galilee is that these mountains come up right to the shore. So you can sit on top of a mountain overlooking the sea. And you can see all the way across. It's not that big. Here's another view, a little bit more clear. So in Jesus' time, you had all these little villages around the shore of the northern end of the Sea of Galilee. So Capernaum's over here, Bethsaida's over here, Magdala, where Mary came from, is over in here in the foreground. So all these little fishing villages scattered around. Now let me give you a view from the other side.
Is it all farming all around the lake? Or
pretty much, yeah. It's just rural.
Yeah.
Farming and things like that. Although a lot of the economic activity came out of the lake itself. So, the fishing. So, the previous pictures were taken from up here. Okay? And this little cut here is called the Valley of the Winds. Remember how last week we talked about storms coming up suddenly? The wind would just whip right through this little cut here that had been eroded. And just that moisture from the sea would hit that hot desert air and just blow up storms all the time. This is a picture of the south side of the lake. See these large cliffs and things like that that run right up against it? So Tiberias, which was the palace, would have been just on the other side of those trees right there in the first century. One of Herod's palaces. All right? So that's the Sea of Galilee. Interesting? You know? Let's take a look at a passage that takes place in this book. Let's break up into small groups of maybe 5 or 6, something like that. And take a look at the passage Mark 5, verses 1 through 20, and just run through these questions real quick. And then we'll get together, and I'll give you guys about 4 minutes, 5 minutes, something like that. And we'll share what we learned.
There's no harm. You can turn around.
5 or 6, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Are we treating it? Yeah. I agree. Where
did everyone get the hand sheet hand out over here?
No.
Up here, I'll pass them around.
Yeah, I'll just kind of.
Would you like to like us to move back?
I think Karen ran.
Okay,
I'll only read.
Hang on, I'm going to pass it.
Okay, during Mark 5:1-5.
Is that better?
Says they went across the lake to the region of Genesis.
Well, it's a little circle.
Just want to sit back here and be quiet. I don't have any interaction.
It's a little circle. Did you get some?
This man lived in the tombs, and no one could climb behind him anymore. Not
more God changed money.
For he had often been chained hand and foot, he tore the chains apart,
took
the irons.
Who wants to read it?
No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night day among the tombs, and then he'll hear him cry out and cut himself in stone.
Does anybody else need one of these?
From the distance, he heard the fellow on the main front. He shouted at the
ground.
Would you find out if both man possessed by the evil spirit came out from the
Lord God's name?
Man lived among the burial caves.
Jesus said, "Come out of this man."
Before he was put into chains and shackles,
Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion."
"No one was strong enough to subdue
him." I know. Oh, in the story. Oh, you're eating a piece of
a large herd of pigs was feeding on the
hill. Jesus knelt and his way. The man saw him and he gave him
a lot of pigs while I was going to dream. Gave him permission, and the empty spirit came out and got his
face. In the name of God, I beg you.
There were about 2,000 in the
room. You're seated. Where's your mouth? Where is the Gerasene? Or the Gathering? Is that on there?
So Gerasene is down like in this area. Gathering is.
Jesus gave them permission. The evil spirit came out of the man.
Stay where you are, you know.
That's
right.
Okay. What did you think? Interesting passage? Kind of Jesus getting out of his element, right? So where does the passage say that they went?
Gerasenes.
Yeah. So the Gerasenes. So Gergesa is just on the other side of the Sea of Galilee here. You can maybe make it out.
It's kind of small.
Sorry. So they went across to this area. And it was called the Decapolis. The Decapolis is just Greek for 10 cities. It's just a region and stuff. But it was an area controlled not by the Romans, but by their rivals, the Parthians, the other superpower of the first century. And Rome was always very concerned that the Parthians were going to invade. When Revelation talks about this fear of the army from the east, the army from the east is the Parthians. That was something that they were always concerned about. Who are the characters in the passage? Jesus, thank you. Yes. Awesome. Success.
Legion,
the demons, okay.
Pigs.
The pigs. Ah, good. Yeah.
The townspeople.
The townspeople. All right. Good.
And the possessed man.
Yes, he's probably an important figure.
Probably the main character.
Okay, so what information can you gather about the region based on this story?
It was hilly.
It was hilly. Okay, yeah.
It was caves.
Agriculture.
And there was a lake.
And there were tombs.
Okay, and there were tombs, yeah. So, do most people like to live near tombs? Not really. I think that's kind of, you know.
I fear people are
going
to go there.
So. Oh, thank you. Thank you. That was awesome. So, what was the response of the inhabitants to Jesus when he did the miracle?
They were mad.
Why were they mad?
Because they lost
it. The pigs.
It was their money.
It was their money, right.
2,000 livestock.
2,000 pigs. Okay, now as someone who owns chickens, is a chicken worth less or more than a pig?
Significantly less.
How many chickens would it take, do you think, to equal a pig?
We have 17, so probably
six.
About 50. Chickens aren't very big. It's probably the size of a pig.
So like 50 chickens to a pig?
Sure.
So they killed how many? 10,000 chickens?
It's a lot.
And that would be, how much would 10,000 chickens be worth?
It would be $100,000.
Yeah. $100,000?
I mean,
$100,000.
$100,000. Once they're done, they're done.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Yes, but people will pay more for bacon.
So it was well, but there's a limited market for bacon. You're not going to sell bacon to, you know, the Jewish people. So
that's true.
Jewish people will take my
bacon. Yeah. So the response was, "Hey, we don't like you, Jesus. Get out of here." Right? Can you see how there was a difference in how the inhabitants in one area responded to Jesus and his ministry versus the other?
Just across the sea.
One of the things when we read the Bible we need to be aware of is that there are political and ethnic boundaries in some areas. When Jesus goes and does ministry in a different context, different things happen. It would be the same for us, like if we got on our suit and tie and went to the inner city and tried to do ministry the exact same way. We're in a different context. If we were to go to South America and try to do church the same way down there that we do up here, it might not have the same sort of effect culturally.
And it wasn't even a big sea. It was more like a lake.
Yes.
Right? What you showed was not very big.
Yes. I'm sorry if that ruined it for you.
No, actually it puts it into context in a way, right? Because he's performing this miracle with the pigs, and then on the other side of the lake, he's well received, but over here,
and it's so close.
Exactly.
It's not like
literally
this, like, so far away, you would think they would have heard or understood or have some similarity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's literally crossing what we would look at and go,
Lake Conroe, right?
And those people over there are so happy he's there, but over here, the people are going, "Get out, you messed up our pigs."
Exactly. Yeah, in other passages, the people that see the miracles would have been focusing on
on Legion and the fact that the demons were out of him, what these people saw would be the equivalent of, you know, you just burn down, you know, cornfields, wheat fields, you know, things like that. That's, I mean, they were focused on how this impacted them, sure, not on the miracle that he performed with Legion.
Exactly. Hmm.
Do we ever do that ourselves?
Not me.
Well, let's move on.
Get the pigs from the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go get those things out. They might be dead, but the meat's still good.
Meat's still good.
Maybe that's just the West Virginian in me. So Nazareth.
New definition of roadkill.
Yeah, exactly. Nazareth. Okay, so Nazareth is one of the largest cities in what is today northern Israel. It has been a Christian city for millennium, obviously. Today, I'm not sure which is larger, Bethlehem or Nazareth. Probably Nazareth, because of the economic embargo in Bethlehem. But Nazareth is predominantly a Palestinian Christian city. But the thing about Nazareth is it sits on these mountains that we talked about. They call it the Nazareth Ridge. So you might remember in Luke 4, Jesus goes to the synagogue in Nazareth and he preaches. And people are so excited. Oh, the kingdom of God has come. The Messiah is here. And then he says, no, no. This special message I'm taking to the Gentiles. And they get so mad at him, they want to throw him off a cliff. Well, here's the type of cliffs you have in Nazareth. I can't say this is the actual cliff, obviously, but as you can see, it's something you probably would not want to go over the side of, right? So the land itself is part of the story. Talk a little bit about the Jezreel Valley. We're going to come back to it in our last passage we talk about today. Okay, so the Jezreel Valley is kind of in between the two major mountains here. It's this area right in here, okay? Obviously agricultural, right by the sea, things like that. Here's what it looks like. This is looking from the ridge, kind of this area in here, looking this way. Towards the ridge. So this is Mount Tabor over here. This is an actual Air Force base there. So that's the Jezreel Valley. We'll come back to that. Okay, the Central Plateau. So remember that we have this raised area up here, these mountains, but it's kind of flat on top. It's just like rolling hills on top of there. So this is a big agricultural area as well for orchards and like olive trees and stuff like that. You know, this is where you have a lot of shepherds and things like that. So as you can see, it's just kind of these hills. This is the area where Samuel, you know, was active, the prophets and things like that. When you read 1 Kings, you know, this is the area it happens in. So see, you've just got these hills, and then you hit the edge of it, and it's like nothing. It just falls off.
Tom, what's the weather? Is it humid, dry? Is it a mix because of all the different...
It's actually pretty dry. So there's not a huge amount of rainfall. That's why one of the big issues, you know, right now is water rights. You know, who has rights to the water because of the olive trees and things like that. So think of it as like a plateau with little rolly hills on top. Make sense? Can you see it in your mind a little bit more? Okay. We're going to skip over this small group discussion on Psalm 22, okay? But I'll say this. If you read Psalm 22 and it talks about how God leads me beside still waters and, you know, this sort of picture. Well, this is the area, again, where you have shepherds going. So if you're in this type of area where it's basically desert, you know, very little rainfall, and you're talking about God is so good that he's going to lead me to these special places where there'll be water and grass and stuff like that. That tells you something about how they see their relationship with God, how God is going to bless them despite what they see in front of them every single day, right? So this area is called the Judean wilderness. But the amazing thing is, in the spring, look what happens to these same hills. They become alive with growth. They turn green because the winter rains have come and have created this foliage. And this was an important part of how they ordered the year. And when we talk about the feasts and things like that, that plays a major part in their understanding of both the calendar year, their agricultural cycle, and then how they saw their relationship with God through these major feasts. But, so the Judean wilderness, yeah, you'll see shepherds. This is a shepherd boy, you know, who's taking his sheep. I know here in America, we get pictures of sheep, you know, and they're all white and fluffy and stuff. That's not what sheep look like in the Middle East. They are ugly. They are ugly. So, just FYI. So you'll see a lot of this today, even. But what you have to understand in the Judean wilderness is where to go, right? Here's a little oasis tucked in to the Judean desert, right? So if you're a shepherd, you know this is where I need to take my sheep in order for them to get water. And that's a monastery there on the cliff. The other thing, you know, we've talked about how small this area is. Here's how close the Judean wilderness and the Dead Sea is to Jerusalem. You can almost see it, this little kind of gold dot right here. This is the Dome of the Rock on the Temple Mount. Here's the Judean wilderness. This over here, this gray space, that's the Dead Sea. That's how close. You can literally stand at the Dome of the Rock and see the Judean wilderness and see, obviously you can't see the Dead Sea itself, but you can see where the valley starts.
How far is that from the Dome of the Rock to the Dead Sea?
I'd probably say about 7 miles, maybe 10 miles at the most. Depending. So we had some guys that actually walked from Jericho up, you know, to Jerusalem until they drank all their water and said, you know what, let's try to get a taxi from here. So now, the Dead Sea. If you have not floated in the Dead Sea, it is an amazing experience. You find cuts where you never thought you would have. But literally, like this guy, you can sit there and float. I got a rock that was about this size, and it floated in the Dead Sea. So it just went down a little bit, and I sat on top of the rock in the Dead Sea.
It's the salt content,
it's
right?
The salt content, yeah. Buoyancy.
Where's the picture of that?
Yeah.
I did not take my camera into the Dead Sea.
So I've heard that the Dead Sea is drying up quite a bit. It's
yes.
A significant thing.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what the timeline is for it being gone, but again, water in the Middle East is a precious commodity. And so I think we saw how there were different rivers and things like that that went into them. Everyone siphoned off the river for, you know, to water their lawns, you know, and everything else. And so that's, yeah, killing the Dead Sea, literally. So this is the Judean wilderness again, looking down into the Dead Sea Valley, right?
The Sea of Galilee is relatively fresh water, though, right?
Yes, because it's fed by first of all, the Jordan River,
right.
You know, it's really fed as well by the snow on Mount Hermon and stuff.
Well, does the, according to the map, does the Jordan River flow into the Dead Sea?
Yes.
Then why is it dead?
Because nothing lives in it.
It doesn't drain.
Okay.
So the water slides all the way to, you know, Salt Lake. Doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
So
nothing
salt builds up.
It's
living
something,
on.
Come, not, something doesn't come
yeah,
into
it. Doesn't
it's nothing.
Drain
it
out.
Doesn't go. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So down at the down at the bottom, they actually use evaporation to make salt and different minerals and things like that. So you can see, you know, originally it was up. It was up here, and now it's all the way down there. It just rises. It's just a sheer cliff, right? This is Masada, which is a first century palace built by Herod. And it is the place where the first Jewish revolt ended. This white streak right here is the Roman siege ramp that the Roman soldiers built in the first century to come up to the wall and break in. And when they finally broke in 73, everyone had killed themselves. They had all committed mass suicide rather than give themselves over to the Romans and go into slavery or be crucified, this sorts of things. So,
does
the
caves in that area is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found?
Yes, to the north. So Masada is about halfway down, and Qumran, where the community was, is up here, kind of up by Jericho. Jericho's about right there. So.
Does the Dead Sea smell?
No, it doesn't. It's not like a rotten smell. It's just kind of like salt water.
Because we went to Salt Lake City,
uh-huh,
and to the Great Salt Lake, and
yeah,
I got to tell you, that was the nastiest smelling thing. It was disgusting. And there were flies, biting flies there.
Oh, no.
It was awful. We went the year. We went the year that they had the Olympics there.
Yeah.
And the other people that were with us, he got out with them, and I was like, there ain't no way I'm getting out in that nasty smell and stuff. And they got bitten by those flies and stuff. It was disgusting.
Yeah, I don't recall anything about biting flies, so. All right. So, yes. Okay, we've got a question.
The Dead Sea is kind of more dying. The Jordan, is that also, since it feeds in there, does that mean that's lessening too?
It is lessening. In fact, so there is a famous bridge here, right there, called the Allenby Bridge. And literally, it is, the Jordan River there is about half the size of this room. It's only like maybe 10 foot across.
Right, because people keep siphoning off.
Yeah, they
of
keep siphoning off, that sort of thing. So, yeah.
Now, is the Jordan River fresh or salt water?
It's fresh.
Okay.
It's fresh.
Do fish live in it?
Yes.
They live in the Dead Sea.
Yeah, it kind of goes over the Dead Sea. All right, let's move on to the Hill Country. So, we talked about how there are these, this central plateau with high mountains, and then you get the hill country, which is kind of lesser hills, and then what we call the Shvela, which is kind of like small rolling hills. This is the area, this isn't a real good picture, it's kind of blurry, but you can kind of see the hill country in the background here, and then the Shvela in the foreground. The Shvela, that's a big agricultural area. And that's why it was fought over by the Philistines and the Israelites. This is where David's stories, and this is actually the Valley of Elah, where David fought Goliath. So we know where the ancient city is. Right here, Soko, was where the Philistines were. That's the Philistine city. The Israelites were over here across the valley, and then running down in between is the brook where David picked up his five stones. So if you go there today, you can walk to the brook and pick up a stone, And then after everyone moves on, and all the tour groups, then the Israeli army comes in, and they drop more rocks for other people to pick up.
And is it fertile because of the soil, or because of the runoff from all of the hills around it that give it a lot of water?
Both. Both. So, this is the view, looking from the Philistines to where the Israelites were. So the Israelites would have been up on this ridge. You know, and they said, oh, we'll come down to the valley, you know, sort of a standoff.
Which way is Jerusalem from there?
So this is down this way, down in here. So Jerusalem would have been...
From a picture standpoint, is that...
Jerusalem would be going this way.
Okay, all right.
So the Valley of Elah is kind of a natural moat, if you will, to the
Israel. So that is
Israel.
Upside down from our map.
Yes. Okay. Mount, let's move to our last, our little discussion group here, our last one, Mount Carmel. So this is Mount Carmel, right? It's kind of an uplift, not a traditional looking mountain, all right? And it runs from the sea kind of all the way over to the central plateau. This is what it looks like from Mount Carmel looking down into the Jezreel Valley. Notice here's that airport that we saw on the other one, or air base. And then this is the kind of the geography, right? So it just runs like this. Now, we talked a little bit about Megiddo and how there was only a couple different ways to get through the path, the pass. Here is where the they called it the Aruna Pass, right? That little thing right there, okay? Here's what it looked like in the early 20th century. Imagine putting a huge army with chariots and things like that through that pass. That's why it was so important. And why there was a huge, huge city built there. Well, huge by ancient standards. Okay, so let's take a look at the passage I gave as homework. 1 Kings 18. Just break up into your little groups. We'll just do this real quick. Tells Ahab to go to Jezreel, right? How are they traveling?
Uber.
Almost.
Uber chariot,
yes. Ahab has what?
A whale.
Chariots.
Yeah.
What does Elijah have?
Feet.
Okay. What were the weather conditions?
Heavy rains.
It was storms.
So, what route did Elijah take to Jezreel, and what route did Ahab take? They're on top. It's 15 to 17 miles. They're on top of Mount Carmel, right here. right? What route did they take?
Yeah, so the chariots had to take a path, but Elijah probably just took the straightest path there, right?
Yeah, so Elijah, he can just go and go the 15 miles. How does Ahab have to go? He's going to go down the backside. And then what does he have to do? He has to go to the pass. So he's got to come all the way down here and go up the pass and then go over. How fast does a human walk?
Yeah, 3 miles an hour. Yeah.
3 miles. An ancient chariot probably goes, if it's running full out, it's probably going maybe 10 at the most.
So just over an hour on the chariot?
Well, if you're going in a straight line.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's about that.
But if you have to go all the way down here and everywhere else, how much did you just add to... You tripled the distance you have to go. And I brought this passage up because I've heard some really crazy ideas about how to interpret it, right? Oh, man, he suddenly became like the Flash, you know, and he outran a chariot. No. It has to do with the geography. The land itself has an influence on the story of the Bible. Right? So one of the things that if we understand the land itself, it'll keep us honest and we won't be able to come up with those crazy superhero type explanations, if that makes sense. Okay, so that's today's takeaways real quick. The land has a big influence on the narrative of the Bible. While the land itself is small, it has huge differences in geology, geography, the way it's made up. In order to properly understand some stories, we need to understand the location and the cultural assumptions of where the stories take place. Why would people get mad about losing their pigs? Would they have pigs if they're Jewish? Three ways that the land influences the Bible. Ethnic or political boundaries. We talked about that with the Mark passage. Cultural themes. That was the Psalm 22. Being out in the desert and saying, God is going to lead me beside a stream. And then it helps ground our interpretation. We can't come up with crazy stuff if we actually understand what really happened. So, as you read the Bible, the New Testament and the Old Testament, think about the land itself. It is also a character. It is also influencing what's going on. All right, next week's homework. And I'll send this in the email this week as well. 2 Chronicles chapter 30, basically. Okay? And the question to think about as you read it is this. What does this passage tell us about the worship of Yahweh in Israel and Judah at this time? This is we call it a bullae. It's a clay stamp that went on a scroll. And this one is actually from King Hezekiah. He's one of the good kings in the Old Testament. He brought the law back, right, and read the law. But he's got these Egyptian symbols on his seal. Religious Egyptian symbols. If he's a good king and he has religious symbols on his seal, how do we understand that? So read the passage. Next week we'll start talking about the intertestamental period and kind of what people were thinking about in the first century when they look back on their past. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Good job.
Excellent.